Welcome to the NorCal Real Estate Show, where we're talking all things real estate in Yolo, Sacramento, and Solano counties. My name is Jeremy Higgins. I'm the team lead of the Higgins team at eXp Realty, and I am here with my partner, who's always with me,
Andrew Loyevsky.
Andrew, what's going on, my buddy? And Nate Darling, our engineer and producer from Darling New Media Studios. What's up, Nate?
Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Now we're fully into the holidays. Happy Hanukkah to anybody.
Yes, absolutely. Happy Hanukkah. Happy holidays, y'all. I hope you had great meals, great times with friends and family. I know I did.
I took a solid 3 days off and did nothing, and it was amazing.
Yeah, I did. I think Thanksgiving was the first day in probably 6 or 7 months that I haven't received a single text or a phone call from a client.
It's a good day.
So I love all my clients, don't get me wrong, but man, it can wear on you when you get your text message, your first text message at 7:15 in the morning and get your last one at 10 o'clock every night.
There's some long days.
I'm not complaining though, man. It's much better than the alternative.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So today we're going to talk about the 6 mistakes to avoid when selling your home. You know what? Selling your home is a huge financial and life decision. You know that. It's one of the largest financial purchases that you'll make in your entire life. And, you know, it's not always as easy as people think. And our goal is to provide you with the maximum amount of convenience, the best experience we can. And obviously, we want to get you the highest possible price when you sell your home. Who doesn't want to get the highest possible price when they sell their home?
Everyone loves money.
You know it. You know, a lot of people will tell us money's not like super important. I'll tell you what.
Makes things a lot easier.
It is that thin line that runs through the entire transaction is the money. All negotiations, everything hinge on that money. So we're going to talk to you about how you can maximize your money, your return, and get the highest possible price for your house. But before we do that, we're going to go into the tip of the day. What do we got, Andrew?
So as we get into the tail end of the year, naturally we start planning for the upcoming year, right? 2022. So this includes real estate stuff. As we mentioned a million times before, call us early so that we can lay out, you know, a roadmap for you. This includes getting repairs done in your home, getting the landscaping looking right so that when you put your house on in the springtime, it looks perfect. But this also includes calling your CPA. So anytime you're selling a property, investment property, whatever it might be, there's going to be some taxes involved. And sometimes, like the last 2 years, we've had this huge appreciation spike. Capital gains is a huge, you know, obstacle. And that can sometimes be the difference between selling or not being able to afford to sell because your tax bill is so high or it doesn't make sense to sell. So,
Yeah, we've talked about capital gains a few times. So I don't want to get too deep into it, but we're finding now that we're running into territory that in my 16 years in this business, we haven't necessarily run into very often. And that is, again, speak with your CPA, but generally, if you've lived in the home for 2 of 5 years, it's considered your principal residence and you're exempt from capital gains when you sell that house. However, that exemption only goes up to $500,000 for a married couple, $250,000 for a single person. So we are running into scenarios now where there's been so much equity over the last decade. If somebody bought their house 10 years ago, there's a strong possibility that they have more than $250,000 or $500,000 in equity built up there. And so you may have some tax consequences. But nonetheless, there's a ton of reasons to be calling your CPA. They are an important component to the sale of a home. And I think a lot of people neglect that aspect of it. I'm sure the CPAs are going to love us for having this podcast about it, but it is really important how you hold title, how you can defer taxes, whether or not you should be putting things in trust, you know, all kinds of stuff. Those people are worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So 6 mistakes to avoid when selling a home. Number one, not doing repairs. What kind of repairs are we talking about though?
So it can be structural repairs that affect, you know, the quality of the home. It can also be superficial stuff, or what we would call superficial, cracks, paint, that type of stuff. We've been in a hot market and we've seen houses come on the market where the seller's like, we're not doing anything. We know it's going to sell for whatever it sells for, and we're just not going to do anything at all. My take on it is we always want to do the best bang for the buck approach. So 100%. Whether it's fresh paint, whatever is going to give you the best return, right? that's always the path that I choose.
Yeah, I agree. I tend to, so we have a team of Andrew, myself, and then we have stagers on the team. And so we often find ourselves at odds with our stagers because Andrew and I, we tend to be really focused on those numbers. We're okay with putting money into a house, but only if that money is going to provide a greater return, meaning we're going to get a return on our investment. So if we put a dollar in, we want to make darn sure that we get $2, $3, $4, $5 back. We don't want to put time and energy because putting updates into a house and spending money, it adds to the transaction. It adds anxiety, stress, all that kind of stuff. So if we can avoid adding anxiety or stress or anything to a transaction, we're all about that. And so it really doesn't make any sense to put a dollar in if you're only going to get a dollar out. So we're, Andrew and I are very big on making sure that we evaluate a property in such a fashion that we can determine whether or not your investment is going to make a big return for you. Our stagers, on the other hand, they're all about making your house look beautiful no matter what. Oh, and they're very good at it. But
they think their budget is unlimited. They start buying everything under the moon. Now we got to kind of pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So so we try to find that happy medium of making your house look absolutely beautiful. And we've got plenty of stories of where we've put some really good lipstick on a pig, I like to call it, where the house didn't look so great, but we put that staging in there and it made it look incredible. We've also had houses where we've done a significant amount of work, $30,000, $40,000 worth of updates to get the house ready for market. But I guarantee you that we only recommended the $30,000 or $40,000 because we knew it was going to get more like an $80,000 to $100,000 return, if not more. So before you make updates, this is something that we've run into a lot where we get the call, hey, I want to list my house and I've just done all these fix-ups. Before you ever put a dime into that house, make sure you give us a call. If you're out of the area, give your realtor a call, have them come over and have them do the analysis for you and make sure that the stuff that you're putting into that house is going to give you a great return. Because we've seen it time and time again where we're like, hey, that looks great, but you just threw money down the toilet.
Well, I've had clients, you know, in the past, they go and they install flooring that's $12, $13, $14 a square foot. It's beautiful. It's amazing. But in terms, you know, from a resale standpoint, you're lucky to maybe get 20 to 30% of that value back. And yeah, it comes to, you know, appliances in the kitchen, you go top of the line, spend 30, 40 grand just on appliances. You're not really getting that value back when it comes to selling it later on.
I would agree. Unless, I mean, there are some special circumstances. I mean, if we're talking about a luxury home, the 1.2, 1.5 range, then absolutely it would look funny if you didn't put that high quality stuff in there. But when we're talking about the average home in Sacramento, $400,000 to $500,000, in Yolo County, $600,000 to $700,000. And there's no sense in paying that extra $1,500 for that stove when you could, you know, could have got out of there with just a kind of middle of the line.
I would agree.
So number two, this is a tough one for us because it goes back to the money, right? Everybody wants money. And so it's not uncommon for us to go on listing appointments and talk about the valuation of a home and a seller wants more. And hey, look, our expectation is to get you the highest possible price for your house. Our goal and our expectation is to put the most amount of money in your pocket, but pricing is important. If we overprice a home or we underprice a home, that's taking money out of your pocket, isn't it?
Definitely. I always make the analogy that, you know, we'll come into a listing presentation and, we say the house is worth 500. Well, the owner thinks it's worth 600, a potential buyer thinks it's worth 400, and the tax man thinks it's worth $1 million, right? So it's our method of pricing is always to take comps in a neighborhood and kind of try to push that upper end of the neighborhood, right? If a really common pricing strategy I see with agents is they just price it super low and then get a bunch of interest built up and try to get multiple offers and sell for more. But I find that if you grossly underprice it, buyers have a hard time offering more than you're asking. So if you're asking 400 for a $500,000 house, buyers feel like they're going above and beyond when they're offering 440 or 450 when they're still 50 grand below market value, right?
Yeah. I mean, we could go so deep into this and this isn't about, you know, pointing fingers at people or whatnot, but when we're out there in the market every day looking at these houses, I mean, we get on there sometimes and we shake our heads and we're like, where did they come up with this strategy of where they're pricing it, you know, or why is it, I just had a listing that was on the market for 2.5 weeks, which in this market's pretty long. And, we received an offer that was $20,000 below our list price. Not a very good offer. It was lower than what it should have been, no doubt about it. And then 2 days later, we get another offer. It was $20,000 above the list price. And I'm thinking, why in the world would any buyer want to pay $20,000 over list price when they, at that moment, they weren't really competing with anybody? I didn't get it. And so I think the only conclusion that I can come up with is that, you know, somebody's feeding them information, right? And that information that was fed to them was not very accurate. And we see the same thing on listings. I mean, we've seen listings that are just so grossly underpriced, and we're thinking, what in the world are they doing? And you know what? I get that. As a real estate agent, when you can bring your client multiple offers within 3 or 4 days, your client could feel like you're doing a great job. Wow, you did some great marketing. Mm-hmm. You got me $20,000 over your list price. But if I told you that $20,000 over your list price was still $20,000 below fair market value, did you really win? So, I mean, that's what we're seeing. So this whole pricing thing, this isn't just throwing a dart at a dartboard and saying it looks good. This isn't about saying your neighbor's house just sold for X number of dollars and therefore yours is going to sell for the same. It takes a lot more data and a lot more research than just, you know, picking one or two comps in the area. When we say comps, we're talking about comparable listings, homes that are mm-hmm. similar to yours. So one of the things that we're a big fan of is bringing in as much data as we possibly can. And I think that's the shortfall that many in our industry run into, is that in a low inventory market like this, we don't have a lot of data points. You can pull up a neighborhood that, you know, is a quarter mile in width, and sometimes you only have 3 or 4 homes that have sold of all different shapes, sizes, and conditions. And it's very difficult when you have 4 data points and you have a 1,500 square foot spread and you've got one house that's been tip-top remodeled shape and another one that's in original condition and yours is kind of somewhere in the middle. How do you determine, right? So not having enough data points is a big deal. So, but that's kind of what a lot in the industry do. So what we've chosen to do is, we have a program that we use that we pull as many data points as possible. So we'll go back further in time if we have to. So we can go back 6 months, a year and a half, 2 years, if we have to. We go wider. And then we plot all of those out on a graph. And then there's a mathematical equation that gives us a median value point. Now, I know you're asking, well, what about those houses that sold 18 months ago? Well, we go in and we do some research and we find out what the market appreciation has been from the 18 months ago point till now. And we make those adjustments to those listings. And then we graph everything. And it creates this kind of median price graph. I don't know what to call it, line. Mm-hmm. We'll call it regression line, actually. If you're a mathematician, you'll know what that means. And then from there, you can make your adjustments based on the condition. It's much more accurate when you use multiple data points like that instead of just kind of using that one that sold 3 months ago down the street.
Yeah, it can be really tough on quirky properties, right? I have one in South Davis right now that's been out on the market for 90 days almost. It was getting ready to expire, and it's a new development. It's not very characteristic and fits the type of house you would find in that area. So we knew we were going to look for a really special buyer. We'd have to wait for one, you know, and I gave him a price and I told him, stick with it. This is going to be a tough sale. Location's not ideal, but someone coming out of the area that's looking for this type of home, they're going to see it. Let's just stick with the price. And we waited almost 90 days getting it sold.
You bring up a great point. And I know the real estate agents are going to be shooting arrows at us right now. I get it. And I don't want to set ourselves up either. But you don't have to sell your house in 5 days to consider it a success. I mean, hear his story there, 90 days on the market. And he ends up getting the price that the seller needed for that house.
Well, actually, we got above.
We got above list price. Yeah. 90 days later, we get above list. I cannot explain why it happens and how it happens, but I can tell you that it happens several times a year. That my listing in Woodland, not as extreme, but 2.5 weeks on the market, and we get an offer that's $20,000 above the list price. So, you know, speed is not always the name of the game. What are you going to say, Nate?
I think sometimes it's just someone starts looking or begins their search in an area, and they don't happen to see the property until a certain point, and then it's like, oh, that'll be perfect for us. And that's kind of where it all falls into place.
Yeah, there's always a fresh pool of buyers that are entering the market at any given time. The other thing that we see a lot, and this is something that if you were a buyer, I would advise against, but this is incredibly common. And that is a buyer sees a home that they like there, and it's been on the market for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And so they're questioning whether or not it's a good investment for them to purchase it. They're thinking, well, if nobody else wants to buy it, you know, should I buy it? And so they tell their agent, hey, let me know if there's any activity on that house, if they receive any offers. So, I mean, almost every week we'll get a call from an agent. Let me know if you get an offer on your house. So we're tracking these buyers. We know when they're going in and looking at the house. And then a month later, we get an offer. We call those agents, hey, we got an offer. And sure enough, that buyer from a month ago jumps into the market and they write an offer on this house. And that's the kind of stuff that happens on this house in Davis and that kind of stuff, where these people, they knew about the house, they sat on it and they waited for another offer to come in. And now they're competing with another buyer. And now you got to pay more to beat the other buyer. Had they come in a month ago, they probably could have, you know, offered $10,000 less and they would have walked away with a great deal. But so
how the world works.
It's crazy, but as a seller, hey, we'll take it.
But yeah, with our pricing strategy, we're always really, really confident with that number that we give you. We've seen lately, agents and sellers are so used to seeing homes fly off the market the first weekend that if they don't get an offer in the first weekend, they immediately resort to, we're dropping the price. And
you know, which is sometimes the answer, by the way. I'm not saying that that's not always right. The answer, but when we suggest a price, we suggest it for a reason, because that's what the data is showing us. And we have a really good pulse on this market. We know when it's going up, we know when it's going down. We know when there, you know, there's little lulls in the market and that kind of stuff. We know what seasons we're going into. So there's lots of different factors. We know what our, what the absorption rate is, meaning, you know, how many other homes like your home are likely going to come on the market in the next couple of weeks or the next couple of months. Right. And if we have a style of house that we just don't see a lot of them, yeah, those are the houses that we're going to say sit, because you have no competitors and you're probably not going to have any competitors. Where on the other hand, if you're in just some, you know, North Natomas neighborhood or something like that, where all the homes are very similar and conforming with one another, well, that one, you might want to be a little bit more aggressive with your price, because you're going to set a price and there's a really good chance within the next week, a new seller is going to come on the market. They're going to see your price and they're going to go right underneath it. Right. So there's a lot that goes on. Again, the bottom line is, call us early. Let's talk this through and we'll set you up for success. The one thing that gets in the way with a lot of this is what, Andrew?
Emotions.
Do you think this is a very emotional process?
100%. I mean, excuse me. This is your biggest asset for most people, right? You've raised your kids in the home, whatever it is, life experiences. And letting go of your house is a very difficult thing for a lot of people.
100%. I mean, there's so many different components to it, right? You know, he spoke to it that there's a money situation, right? Some people are more nervous about money than others. But those that are nervous about money, they're really nervous about money. There's the legal aspects of it. It's a legal transaction and it's a pretty sizable one. So some people are very risk averse and that's really important to them. There's the emotional side of it. Like Andrew said, people who've lived in the home for 30 years, raised their children there, that kind of stuff, a family member's home, those types of things. So there's lots of different components, and that's our other job, honestly, is we are the therapist in this transaction, right? We're trying to keep you educated and informed and help you, you know, remain calm through the process. If your emotions get too high, they can cloud your judgment. And that's the biggest challenge that we run into. If somebody's a little bit overly concerned about money, then they actually will make decisions that put them in a worse financial situation.
So that's one aspect of it. We've seen sellers that have Ring doorbells, and they like to sit and watch their Ring doorbell for every single showing that comes through. And anytime you're dealing with people, stuff comes up, people cancel appointments, whatever it might be, right? And sometimes people schedule an appointment and they don't show up. It happens. And that can really offend sellers sometimes, right? And we've seen it. We're in a mask era right now. You have to wear a mask when you show houses. Some people walk into your home without wearing a mask and this owner feels violated, right? So we've seen it where someone's watching the Ring doorbell and they tell us we're not selling to them. They didn't wear a mask. They didn't show up. They showed up late. They brought their dog into the house, whatever it is. And sometimes those people can bring you a really great offer. And sometimes you just have to just look at it and just, you know, look at the numbers on the table and not let your emotions get in the way.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's your home and you have a choice to make the decisions that you want to make as long as it's not based on some sort of discriminatory act. But yeah, I think if you go into it with the knowledge and the expectation that these little bumps in the road are going to happen, it can help you out a lot in making the right decisions as you go along the path. And just know that this is a negotiation. The buyer is looking to get the best possible price. You as a seller are looking to get the highest possible price. The real estate agents are there to represent their clients and get them the lowest or the highest possible price. And that's just what a negotiation is. You're not going to be happy with what the other side wants. And you just got to work through it. And one of the things that I've learned in my time is if you go into it with a mindset that this is a negotiation, and the longer this negotiation goes, the more it's going to benefit you. And I know that may sound odd. Most people don't want negotiations. We hear buyers say, I don't want to get into a bidding frenzy. You know, we hear, you know, sellers, I don't want to go back and forth. They just take my price or leave it. You know, that's kind of the attitude. And, I've just, again, lots of homes under our belts here. The longer you can take that negotiation, the better, because the other side will wear out. So if you go into it with that mindset that you're there to wear them out, you will wear them out and you will get what you want, but you got to hold tight and you got to be tough.
I think what I'm hearing is there's a lot of stress and anxiety that goes in with this just because of the sheer size of the purchase. And when you take your own personal feelings about your home and like have that wrapped up in it, it just gets so easy to be in that emotional state. And that's why you guys exist.
Exactly. And I think it's okay to be emotional. It just be emotional at the right time. That's my point. Like as a buyer, I sure hope you're emotional about this house. I sure hope that you absolutely love this home. And that you would be heartbroken if you didn't get it type of stuff. Cause if you don't feel that way, then I don't even know if you should be writing the offer.
Now is that something that if I'm somebody who is buying or selling and you're my realtor, I'm working with you, that I should let you know, hey, I'm really emotional about this, just to give you a heads up to be like keeping an eye out for that sort of thing?
Of course. I mean, we've been doing
this
a while.
We're pretty good at picking up those cues.
We can read a lot of that stuff for sure. But I think, you know, we are human too. And we were just talking about a situation that I don't feel like I handled very well because I wasn't hearing what the person was saying. I guess I wasn't hearing what the person wasn't saying. Right. So we hear what comes out of people's mouths and it doesn't always reflect what they're actually feeling. And I think we take a lot of pride in being able to see through that and understand where people are coming from on the inside, and we do our best, but we're not always perfect. And in this situation, I made a mistake. The person was selling their mother's home who passed. And, when we first met with him, he was very businesslike and he was just very, you know, X, Y, you know, numbers and this kind of stuff. And so I went down that path thinking that's what he wanted to do. And it turns out that he was very emotional about his mom's passing naturally. And I feel bad about it, honestly. I can't even believe I'm saying it on the podcast. But we got the feedback later on that like it just felt like, I wasn't respecting the feelings that he was having. So we do our best to do that. But it certainly would help us. And I think it would give you a better experience as a consumer, as a seller or a buyer, if you communicated with us how you want to be communicated to. Because there's nothing wrong with an engineer type being very into the numbers and wants to know every single detail. But just know that we work with clients who absolutely want to know nothing about that. We work with a doctor type. They don't want to know anything about the details. They don't want to, you know, they don't want you to read you a contract or anything like that. It's like, what's the bottom line? Am I going to do it or am I not? You know,
here's the money. Tell me where to sign. Yeah. Advise me. Let's get this thing done.
And so, you know, we're not always perfect. Sometimes we run into a client that we assume would want to be detail oriented. Attorneys are difficult, right? I mean, you would think an attorney would want to know every little, you know, term in a contract. Some of them are not. Some of them have the attitude of like, well, if something goes wrong, I'll take care of it, you know? So I think that was a great question, Nate, because the more you communicate with us and let us know what you're feeling and how you want to be communicated to, the better experience that we can provide for you. So another one is more technical. And I think this falls on the shoulders of your real estate agent, but how many of you have jumped online and you're looking at a $600,000-$800,000 house with these really dark, grainy pictures of toilets? I mean, as a real estate agent, man, I look at that and I'm like, holy moly. I mean, this agent's going to make some money off this deal, and they can't even invest $250, $275 in a little professional photography. Are you kidding me? So the next question, how many of you have seen houses like that? Or worse, you see houses that don't have any pictures at all, or they just have a picture of the front of the house and you just pass it on by. I mean, it happens all the time. So professional photography is critical, y'all. It's the first thing that people see when they're looking for your home. Almost all buyers are looking online right now. So that means you don't have a real estate agent there doing their sales magic on people and influencing people or anything like that. It's all that photograph. That's the only thing that's going to bring them to your house at that moment.
The first impression is so huge.
It's incredible.
The photographs are what get you to the home, right? If you have bad photographs, but it could be a perfectly great home in person, you might miss out on someone that looks at that photograph and just writes it off their list. We're not going to see that one. But maybe if they saw the house in person, that would totally change their mind.
This is the one thing that I can never figure out, though. Like, our clients, we tell them the photography is going to be done on Thursday or whatever. And I guarantee you, we're getting a text by 2 o'clock that afternoon. When are the photos going to be ready?
I want to see the photos.
I want to be. And I'm like, how are these agents getting away with listing these houses with no photography? Every one of our sellers gets online and looks at their house as soon as it's listed. They want to know, when is it live, right? And then they get onto Zillow, they get onto the realtor.com, whatnot, and they're looking at their listing. And I'm like, these other folks, like, are their sellers not getting online and going, well, my neighbor's house looks great, you know, with these awesome photographs, and then mine has one photo? Like, I can't figure that out.
I don't know. We've built a really high quality brand for ourselves, and we have booklets of previous sales and stuff, and the houses look amazing. And that's what our future clients expect, right? Because we're going to present that to them. But I have colleagues, other agents that I know of that take photos themselves on their phones.
Yeah, I'm a really, really good real estate agent, but I mean, you got to stay in your lane, folks. You got to stay in your lane. I'm not a photographer.
Like, I would
work magic.
I would be embarrassed to sell a house and present it the way some of these people do. Like, I would never let that happen. Bad staging, picture of a toilet, dark photos, mirror selfie in the bathroom. I'd be embarrassed.
That's Andrew's pet peeve, looking at people in the mirror. It is so true. Yeah. Yes, we do it because we want to provide a great level of service, but honestly, we also do it because our clients expect it from us. Mm-hmm. I don't know wherever those clients are that don't care about photography and don't care about anything. Like, you sound like you're great, easy clients to work with. Give us a call. We'd love to work with you. We'll give you the professional photography anyway. We'll do it for free, but yeah, crazy stuff. So, another one, the next one is selling before you're ready. What does that mean?
That means you need to have a plan after you sell your home. you need to have a place to go. You need to make sure your finances are in order to be able to afford the next place that you're going, whether it's renting, moving out of state, purchasing another home out of the area, whatever it might be. Have a plan in place.
I agree. Have a plan in place. But be reasonable with it. We don't want to go too far on the other end of the spectrum where you're like, I'm not in a rush. I mean, a lot of people say that because they don't want to be pressured in anything. I get that. Like, that's totally normal. When you're in it, you'll realize that that's not really the way it works. But at the same time, you don't want to wait forever, right? In a market that we're in, I'll just give you kind of an example. You know, we have folks that say, well, you know, if I can't find the house that I want now, then I'll wait and I'll try it again next year, or I'll wait until the spring. Two reasons why that's a problem. One, right now you can go out and find houses that may not have any offers on them, or they have two or three offers on them. And you can get away with buying a house at list price, at value, or maybe a little bit over. You wait until the spring and we go back to 15, 20 offers. That's not happening, right? You're going to write way more offers because you're not going to win every single thing. And you're going to pay a lot more money in order to get that seller to accept your offer. That's one. Two, interest rates are expected to go up in the coming year. I think everybody's heard that by now. I can't tell the future, but that's what most economists are saying. They're saying interest rates can increase by as much as 1% by this time next year. The Tom Ferry organization, a real estate organization that we've participated in, they came out with some mathematical figures. For every 1% that the interest rate goes up, it reduces your buying power by 10%. So that means if you're looking at a $500,000 house today and you chose to buy it next year, that $500,000 house would be $550,000. So you will have lost $50,000 simply by waiting a year. The second part of that is the Zillow came out recently and said that they expect that the real estate will increase in price by 12 to 13%. National Association of Realtors says it's going to increase by 8%. So 8 to 13% is what we've got two very reputable organizations anticipating the appreciation is. So again, on a $500,000 house, we're looking at another 10% in price increase. So that means you waiting, your $500,000 house that you wanted to buy is going to be $600,000 next year, or more likely than not, you're going to have to buy a $500,000 house next year, and it's just going to be like what a $400,000 house looks like today. So don't wait too long, right? But back to our main question was, you know, make sure you're ready before you sell, right? So make sure that you have you know where you're going, what the plan is. We'll help you through that as well. One of the things that I think is really important that people don't do enough of is getting an idea of what your home's going to sell for in advance before you sell it on the market. So talk to us. We'll tell you what we think your house is going to sell for. Then you take that figure to your lender, and then your lender will work all those numbers and they'll say, okay, based on your comfortable monthly payment that you want, based on the proceeds that you're going to get from your house, based on your interest rate, we think that you can buy a house worth X number of dollars, and then you're ready to go. All right. And then we can talk about the trying to do the two-way deal where you're selling and buying, all that stuff. It gets kind of confusing, but we got you taken care of. So, but we're not going to go into that today. Right?
Nope.
All right. Last one, refusing to negotiate. We did kind of talk about this one a little bit.
A little bit. This goes back to letting emotions take over, right?
Yeah.
It's your home. It's your baby. You've raised your kids in it, and you don't want to give it away for free. You feel like that little ding in the wall or that light that doesn't work isn't a big deal. But to a buyer coming in, hey, we're paying $500,000 for a house. We would expect the roof to be in good condition. We would expect all the lights to work. But from a seller standpoint, you know, they feel like their house is a palace. It's worth way more. You know, everything's a little, not a big deal because it worked fine for us. But don't let small stuff get in the way of closing a transaction.
I would agree. And I'm going to kind of go a little bit off the subject here regarding the negotiation. So many of you probably don't know, but in my previous life, I was actually a crisis negotiator, hostage negotiator. And one of the trainings that we took was the premise of negotiations in general is that the decision maker should never be a principal in the negotiation. Meaning if you're the one that's making the decision, you should not be the one directly negotiating. It's like, it's why when you go to buy a car, you're working with the salesperson, but the salesperson's like, let me go talk to my manager, right? And, but you never get to talk to the manager. Like, of course the manager could talk to you, right? They're right there in the other room. The reason they do it is because that's where the power of negotiation comes in. The same is true with your house. We don't want you to be a principal in that negotiation. But in order for you to remove yourself from that position, you have to have immense trust in the person that you're working with. That car salesman manager, they have trust in their salesperson because presumably they've trained that salesperson that, you know, they know how that person works. On our team, when we're working with our buyer's agents and stuff, we're not going to just let any buyer's agent work with one of our clients. Clearly, we're going to make sure that there's a standard that's being met. So it goes back to, you have to have immense trust in the person that you're working with. And more deals go south in our business because the trust is broken between the agent and the client. And I don't mean us. I mean, more deals fall through because on the other side, the trust was broken between that agent and that client. So choosing your agent is not a small task. It's something that you should take very seriously. You should interview and you should not work with the first one. I'll tell you that 80%+ of all buyers and sellers work with the very first agent that they come in contact with. That, my friends, is wrong. I think it's really important for you to interview more than one agent. Hopefully we're one of them. But if you came to interview us, we sure hope that you go interview with other people. We want to work with people that trust us because we can't do our job correctly if you don't trust us. So if we're just not jiving, we'd much rather you work with another agent. Hopefully that won't happen, but you know, it's still true. So if you have the trust with your agent, then you can trust the negotiation process. That's my point through this whole thing.
Yeah. Communication's key, right? And not everyone communicates or gets along with everyone, right? We're pretty adaptive. We're flexible. We do a pretty good job of that. But we're not everyone's always a good fit. So I always say it's not about the information being presented. It's how it's presented. And I find a lot of times agents will present small little hiccups in a transaction and they make it sound way worse than it really is. And then it puts their client on edge and then the whole transaction's on eggshell to that point, right? So our goal is always keep the emotions just very even kilter, stress-free, let us do all the heavy lifting and everything will work out great.
You bet. So that, my friends, was the 6 mistakes to avoid when selling your house. Now, there's other mistakes, obviously, but we've only got one podcast segment.
We could be here for hours.
We could be here forever. But those were the six big mistakes that stood out to us today. We hope that you learned something. And we hope that if you have any questions or if you're thinking about buying or selling a house, obviously, give us a call or email us at podcast@higginshomesearch.com. Again, that's podcast@higginshomesearch.com. It was good hanging out with you, Nate. Good hanging out with you, Andrew. And y'all, we'll see you on the next one. Take care.